This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Hundreds of thousands of people are diagnosed with Lyme disease each year, and it's a particular problem on the Cape and Islands. Between 2010 and 2014, Chilmark and Nantucket had the highest number of cases of Lyme disease per capita anywhere in the state. And even after treatment, some patients continue to suffer problems with memory and thinking, similar to patients who have brain injuries. The recently founded Dean Center for Tick-Borne Illness at Spalding Rehab Hospital aims to provide better diagnosis and treatment of Lyme disease through a combination of cutting-edge research and clinical care. Dr. Nevena Zubcevic is an instructor of physical medicine and rehabilitation at Harvard Medical School and an attending physician at Spalding Rehab Hospital and Massachusetts General Hospital. She's also clinical co-director of the Dean Center for Tick-Borne Illness. I spoke to Dr. Zubcevic last August, and we're revisiting that conversation now. I asked her, as a concussion researcher originally, how she ended up studying Lyme disease.
So we noticed that a lot of our patients with Lyme disease and co-infections were presenting very similar to our concussions patients, and that involves problems with headaches, ongoing memory difficulties, concentration difficulties, depression, anxiety. And so we decided that it would be beneficial if we took a peek and did some of the studies that we do for our concussion patients and apply them to our Lyme patients as well, to try to understand better the etiology of this problem and why people remain with this chronicity that really affects their life overall and their quality of life and performance in school, work, at home. And we decided to take that on.
Well, of course, as most people know, you get Lyme disease from the bite of an infected deer tick. Roughly 300,000 Americans diagnosed each year. And we don't know exactly how many of those end up suffering these long-lasting symptoms, but some research says it might be as high as 20%. What are the symptoms that these chronic infections can cause?
Right. So actually, the statistics are a bit higher. Dr. John Aucott at Johns Hopkins University has been studying this, and there's a study published 2 years ago where he looked at people with truly the bacteria was on the skin in these patients, previously healthy patients. And then those patients were given the 21 days of doxycycline, the standard of treatment for Lyme disease, and about 35% of patients remained with some chronic symptoms. So that's a considerable amount of people who will not completely heal.
And what are some of the symptoms when you say they have these chronic symptoms that are not relieved by antibiotic treatment? What symptoms
exactly.
do they still have?
So it goes back to kind of our concussion patients. It's very similar, you know, some loss of memory. And really, patients suffer a lot from short-term memory loss. Some of our patients suffer from long-term memory loss. And this can be months to years after exposure. They will also have significant stiff neck, headaches, joint aches and pains, muscle aches and pains, problems with focus, concentration, executive tasks, being able to perform more than one task at a given time. And they will have numbness and tingling in their arms and legs, profound fatigue, you know, that really puts them in bed and they can't function. Also, panic attacks, anxiety, and depression are pretty significant contributing symptoms to this condition.
Even in the more acute form, things like fatigue and joint pain are very common symptoms. Given all of these other neurological symptoms, do you think that those could actually be neurological manifestations, that you're feeling the pain because of some nerve phenomenon, or is that more likely an acute inflammation? I mean, do you think they're linked to a brain effect, or are they something separate?
Certainly, from what we're looking at in our radiological findings, so we do positron emission tomography, otherwise known as PET scanning of some of our patients' brains, and we're able to note that parts of the brain are really not feeding the way that they're supposed to. So they have this hypometabolic feature. They're not able to metabolize glucose, which is the primary nutrient in the brain, very well. And so certainly a lot of these symptoms can be centrally mediated or, you know, be caused because the brain is effectively suffering. But also we know that many strains of Lyme have different propensity toward different tissues. So some strains of Lyme are more neurotropic, meaning that they prefer the nervous system as where they will go. Some strains of Lyme prefer joints. And so there's a lot more research needed to be done depending on, you know, which strain of Lyme goes to which tissue and causes problems there. You know, and one of the most important things that we're working on in our center, which we're designing as a, you know, translational medicine center, where we're looking at the basic science and how do we apply it to patient care, is to really, design both research studies and treatment strategies that will help address the patient's needs depending on a personalized medicine, really, because not every patient will be infected by the same strains, and depending on the genetic material that each of us is kind of engineered by, we will have a different response to a different strain of a different bug. And so not everybody will respond the same either to a different pathogen. And that's called a, you know, host pathogen interaction. And that will vary. So the genes expressions will vary. So in this, you know, disease and the cluster of illnesses of Lyme and co-infection. So it's not just Lyme that we're really concerned about, you know, also babesiosis, anaplasma, Ehrlichia. It's very important to do this kind of precision medicine approach. And I think what the future holds really is this sort of looking, not just for this, but medicine in general, looking at the individual patient and how they respond to the therapy, depending on what their genes are saying and what kind of infection they have.
You're listening to Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. I'm talking with Dr. Nevena Zubcevic, co-director of the Dean Center for Tick-Borne Illnesses at the Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. I mean, you mentioned the various different strains of the spirochete that causes, of Borrelia that causes Lyme disease, and then all of the other bacteria that ticks can carry. And now we're also have been hearing in recent days about the Powassan virus, which is here on the Cape and is found in ticks and may be responsible, according to one study, for, you know, 20% perhaps of these. They were associated with, maybe not causing the symptoms, but found in patients with chronic Lyme disease. You're working usually with patients who have already been diagnosed, are looking for some sort of long-term treatment. But how can you be confident that you've got the right diagnosis when there are so many different infections that these people could have? And the testing has really been controversial and has been criticized by a lot of people for not being as effective as it should be.
Right. And, you know, we all know that the testing isn't really adequate just in general when it comes to, you know, Lyme and co-infections. And the reason is that the testing, the one that we rely on these days, is awaiting an immune response to these spirochetes. And sometimes that's delayed. So in over 50% of patients, the first 6 weeks of infection, there will be a negligible immune response and be difficult to find on a test. So it's kind of scary in a way, because within those 6 weeks, a lot can happen. This bacterium can penetrate the tissues, start causing lots of problems. And we know it's some of these strains are highly neurotoxic and they can start injuring the nervous system and so forth. So really awaiting 6 weeks until these tests, at least for the Borrelia burgdorferi strain, start coming back positive, it, in my opinion, is very dangerous.
Nevena, we were talking about these neurological effects. You were talking about how you originally got into this because it was actually so similar to concussion. We've also heard a lot in the past few years about how concussion patients may have changes in their brains that actually look like Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia. I've heard some Lyme patients say that they think that Lyme is actually being misdiagnosed as other neurological diseases. How much of that kind of confusion do you see? You know, could there be a lot of misdiagnosis of Lyme disease as other neurological problems?
So, you know, when we study about Lyme in medical school, we're always told it's the great imitator. And that's you know, perfect way to describe this disease. It really can present very differently in different patients, sometimes as, you know, solitary knee arthritis or migratory knee or migratory arthritis. It goes, you know, as pain in different joints. One day is here, next day is there. It can present more neurologically. And so, you know, many of my patients have received different diagnoses throughout the years, and sometimes it's fibromyalgia. It seems like to be a very common one that I see, migraine headaches. Usually a patient comes with, you know, three or four different diagnoses that definitely fit that profile of an illness that's infiltrated multiple symptoms. So you'll have, you know, depression, anxiety, panic attacks, fibromyalgia, arthritis. And somebody who's been, you know, who's had this as a sudden onset. Usually my patients, most of my patients, you know, and since the clinic opened last June, you know, we've seen over 100 folks and, I mean, sorry, over 400 folks. And usually, you know, most of these people were really healthy before, you know, athletes and professionals and busy people having healthy and productive lives. And then suddenly, you know, they usually, most of my patients remember like either the exact date or the exact month when all of these symptoms started, and then they became very, very ill. So, yeah, it's, you know, as physicians, we really need better tools to be able to properly diagnose the patients, because then we'll be able to really hone in on what the causing reason is for our patients being sick.
So talk about some of the ways that you have at the rehab hospital been treating long-term Lyme patients.
At Spalding, we're very fortunate. It's an amazing rehabilitation hospital that offers a lot for our patients. So we are able to, once we diagnose our patients and work, we usually work as a team with infectious disease or, you know, Lyme treating providers in the community, our own physical therapists, occupational therapists. Many of our Lyme patients require a speech and language pathology therapy for cognitive remediation, so to help them regain some of the cognitive skills that they have lost. We also have a state-of-the-art neuromodulation lab headed up by Dr. Felipe Freni, and that's, you know, a lab that helps us utilize tools such as transcranial direct current stimulation and pulsed electromagnetic stimulation and so forth, where we are able to utilize these novel, really, and exciting tools to improve the metabolism of the brain, so to reduce inflammation in the brain and help the brain eat better, you know, get more nutrition. And so those are some of the studies that we're doing with our Lyme patients. And so far, the results are really exciting in the few case studies that we have done.
You're listening to Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. I'm talking with Dr. Nevena Zubcevic, co-director of the Dean Center for Tick-Borne Illnesses at the Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. How many of those treatments that you were talking about, whether it's some of the electrical stimulation of the brain, the nutritional or mental health support, I mean, especially in that latter case, that's more supportive care. But when you're talking about something like brain stimulation, is that actually treating the disease, trying to reverse the course of the disease, or is that more just treating some of the symptoms of the disease?
So our approach to our patients is very comprehensive. When we see the patients, we try to figure out, you know, why are patients still sick? And this is why we work as a team. So, you know, there's something called post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome. And, you know, when you go to the CDC website, it's nice and clear, and it says, you know, we don't really know what's causing this. And, you know, sometimes it could be a persistent infection. There's animal studies out there showing that, you know, it's concerning. It's possible that this bacterium can persist, and we need more studies to really show that in humans and understand it better. Also, there's a piece of autoimmunity. So, you know, the immune system can play a role and develop like an autoimmune disease that's triggered by this infection. And then, you know, chronic inflammation. So many illnesses will, you know, like arthritis, you know, there's areas of the body that can become chronically inflamed. And so it's really important to address, to figure out which components are contributing to the patient's health out of those, and then try to address them. And so that's why we work in a team of people and with providers who can help us treat the patient comprehensively and with this precision medicine approach. And so the therapies that we offer hone in on neuro regeneration and neuro recovery, because after the system has been injured, whether it's autoimmunity, inflammation, or infection, it needs to recover to go back to baseline. And so the therapies that we offer are crucial so that the patients can go back to utilizing their neurological and musculoskeletal system to the best of their ability using these techniques. And so that's very exciting for us, is being able to really give our patients their lives back.
That's Lyme researcher Dr. Nevena Zubcevic speaking to us last August. When we come back, we hear what an ancient bone flute sounds like. This is Living Lab Radio. Stay with us.